This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
You're listening to the Momwell Podcast. Today, I have something a little bit different planned for you. As you might know, my book, Releasing the Motherload, How to Carry Less and Enjoy Motherhood More, hits the shelves on April 9th. The process of writing this book has been a wild ride, one that came with ups and downs and taught me a lot about myself. And while I am so proud of the work that I put into this book, it would never have happened without my guest today, my literary agent, Carly Waters. Like so many of you, Carly leaned on the podcast and our Instagram posts throughout the pandemic, a time when many of us felt as if we were drowning, pulled down by the weight of the invisible load. And along the way, she reached out to me and we started the journey to bringing this book to life and helping moms everywhere carve out a different path in motherhood, one where they aren't constantly bogged down by unseen mental and emotional labor. Today, Carly and I discuss how the book came to be. We also discuss why moms are carrying the invisible load and why it feels so overwhelming. The social pressure that fuels the load and makes us feel as if we can never be enough, and how to use our values to break away from those pressures, reduce the mental labor, and break the patterns in our home that lead to an unfair distribution of labor, often resulting in resentment and blame. But before jumping in, I'd like to take a moment to share what Eve Rodsky, New York Times bestselling author and creator of Fair Play, had to say about the book. If you've ever felt like you're the only one struggling with motherhood, this book is for you. Erica Jossa approaches the weight that modern moms feel with compassion, understanding, and a proactive method to breaking out from under it. You're not alone, you're not failing, and you don't have to carry the weight by yourself. Thank you so much, Eve, for your endorsement. I appreciate you and your work in this space, and I know we are both dedicated to shining a light on this mental labor and helping moms break away from carrying it alone. Now let's hear my conversation with my literary agent, Carly Waters. Welcome to the Momwell Podcast, where we're committed to helping you cope with the load of motherhood. I'm your host, registered psychotherapist, and founder of Momwell, Erica Jossa. At Momwell, we know that motherhood is hard, but care shouldn't be. We're committed to providing you with knowledge, tools, and support to navigate the challenges of motherhood. Our mission is to put moms back on the priority list and empower them to create a mental wellness toolbox free from judgment, fear, and shame. On the show, we'll be discussing topics such as postpartum depression, identity loss, the mental load of motherhood, and more. We'll be joined by experts, moms, and professionals who can offer advice, practical tips, relatable stories, and honest conversations. Here at Momwell, we believe that when a mom is well, a baby is well. So join us as we discuss the topics that matter to you with experts who get it. Together, we can redefine motherhood and change the way moms are treated. Carly, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. I'm excited to have you here. This is going to be like a different type of conversation today, I think. And I'm really excited. Excited for you to be here.
Yeah, I'm honestly so honored. You have such esteemed guests in your field. And obviously, I am esteemed in my own field as a literary agent. But yeah, it's an honor to be here and to be able to have a conversation with you and just kind of bring this book to life.
I always start with the curiosity of how someone niched down in their space. And like, when do you have this aha moment, like, I want to become a literary agent? I didn't even know what a literary agent was until I entered the creator space. So how did you evolve into this role? Like, you've got the podcast now, you've got the platform, all the different books that you've represented, obviously years in the making to build yourself in this space. But how did you get pulled towards it?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I did an undergrad in English language and literature and really loved it. And I thought I wanted to be a teacher. And so I did some kind of like practicum placements. And I was like, wait a minute, it's not the teaching that I like so much as it's like the books, you know, like I wanted to share the literature and I wanted to you know, I just wanted my life to be like one long book club, essentially. And so the teaching, I was like, it wasn't that helping the kids as much as I like kids. It was, I really just wanted to bring that like love of books and love of literature and that kind of element to my life. And once that all clicked, I signed up for a, I guess I should say, applied for a master's in book publishing. And so I graduated my undergrad in 2008, which was, if you guys remember, the recession, and everybody's like, nobody's going to get a job. Everybody has to do like an extra degree or something like that. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do my extra degree and just specialize. And so I really specialized from the beginning, which, you know, had so many benefits, as I said, coming out of the pandemic and just being employable. You know, like I wanted to make sure that I had the skills and could stand out from a resume point of view. And then I really just fell head over heels for being an agent, because I think one of the best things about my job is that I get to do a little bit of everything. And you can't really say that with a lot of jobs, where it's like, I get to do, you know, work directly with talent and help actually develop, you know, books. And then I get to do the deal and I get to negotiate it and work on contracts and help with marketing and publicity. And, you know, just really thinking about the lifespan of a book. And so I think it's a really special, special job. And there's also not a lot of jobs you can say where you get to literally handpick everybody you work with, because, you know, I reach out to clients, you know, offer them representation, you know, work one-on-one with them. And it's a really special kind of intimate relationship. And, you know, on the platform side, I also felt like, you know, as I've built my career over the years, that, you know, the amount of information that I have is just so beneficial to writers who want to get published. And I always felt like it was information hoarding to have all this knowledge and all this insight and scoop on the business, and then just sit on that knowledge. And so I've always been really active on Twitter and on Instagram. And I dabbled in TikTok, just, you know, spreading the word about how to get published, you know, the inside scoop of the book business. And that's always just really important to me. And so that teaching piece always came back around, because I really do love, you know, being able to give back to the writing community in that sense. So it's a really fun job.
I too like to wear many hats, as you may have learned over the years. So having that variety and that change and that movement is a piece for me that I really gravitate towards. So it's cool that you get all the exciting pieces, and then I'm sure some of the not so exciting pieces, but a good mixture in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that I respect so much about the business owners and the creators that I work with who have businesses, because I understand how hard it is for them to be like running their business, developing all this content, working on a book. I know the amount of effort that goes into it, the huge labor of love that a book can be on top of running your business.
So literary agents really code for life coach. Like, let's just put it out there, pretty much coach me through the process, which is like, I don't know, having that relationship with somebody that you trust. I entered into the creator space kind of on a whim to really process my own journey into motherhood, particularly after my third, when I went through my own experience with postpartum depression and anxiety, which I speak really openly about here on the podcast. And starting a page just to create awareness, support, help in this transition to this role. Obviously, like the idea of being a published author one day would be amazing or whatever, but I didn't start with a business in mind. I didn't start with a book in mind, and it kind of naturally evolved. So not knowing much about the publishing space, having somebody who you've got a relationship with, who you trust, also has your best interest at heart, and also like can guide the process, because there's so many different stages and things that are priorities versus not priorities, has been so helpful for me to make sure that my voice is still ultimately heard and authentic and genuine and all of that. But also, I just am in a new, entirely new world. Like, I didn't know the ropes. I didn't know the rules, essentially.
Yeah, there's so many people, as I said, who are just like experts in their field, and they know the value of an expert. And I think that's one of the things about, you know, hiring a literary agent. You're like, I'm an expert in my field. I got this locked down, right? I need somebody. It's like, you know, when you're hiring a real estate agent, or, you know, just somebody, again, like a really specialized person, you're like, you're going through this whole new experience, and you're smart enough to know that you need an expert to help you with what you don't know. And I think, you know, writing a book, there's that really romantic part of writing a book where it's like, I'm just going to sit in my office and type, 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 type. And it's like, you know, or go on sabbatical for a month and, you know, write this beautiful manuscript where you're drinking tea all day long, and that beautiful idea. And then there's the reality of like, what happens when, not necessarily that always things go wrong, but it's like, oh, I have to have a conversation, you know, about this element of the book or this theme, or if, you know, this chapter needs to be cut, or, oh, we got to move up the pub date or move back the pub date. You know, there's always this like juggling act. And, you know, I talk about this a lot with publishing, where a lot of writers and people who want to write a book are those like awesome straight A students who are like, always do everything right. And, you know, they're like, you know, I've always been a good student. And therefore, writing a book, I should also be good at that, right? And there's this like, performative element, but they're still kind of, you know, feeling their way through an entirely new business, right? And my job is to be completely specialized in this industry so that I can tell you, like, I've been here before, I've done this with another client, you know, we can get you through this. And so, as you said, that trust piece is so important that, you know, they, all my clients know that I have their back to get them through anything that comes their way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does really feel like a steady pilot kind of running. Someone's got to be the adult in the room, you know? For once, it's not me. I can turn to Carly and be like, oh, what are we doing here? And I've learned a lot about myself throughout the process, not even just in the material of the book, but just in the process. And I mean, over the duration of 2.5 years, you evolve a lot, but ultimately wrote a book that I feel like will just truly represent our platform for years and years to come. I've never asked you, and we've never gotten to like dive into how we met and what drew you to me. I was very fortunate to be introduced to you like via my platform. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of people go through querying process and it can be really, I'm sure, discouraging and cumbersome and like a lot of different things. But the way that you and I met, I remember you saying, you know, you had followed for some time and the content was like relevant to the stage of motherhood you were in. But I don't know that we've ever really talked about it much beyond that. So I'm curious.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like, you know, I think I reached out via DM is from what I remember. And then we kind of started the conversation into email and Zoom and all of that. But yeah, I mean, I think that was at a time where I feel like it was kind of around the early pandemic time is what I remember. And so in the early pandemic, I had a 2-year-old and a newborn baby. My baby turns 4, my pandemic baby. And so I was just like absolutely in the thick of it with having a job and 2 kids. And so Instagram has always, you know, been one of those places where you can get a lot of great information. Mm-hmm. You can also get a lot of information where you're like, I don't know what the source is, and obviously all this misinformation. But Instagram is just, it is a wonderful place for experts to be able to kind of, you know, reach audiences and change people's life. And I think one of the things that, you know, the account was called Happy as a Mother at the time. And one of the things which I think your account did so well was meeting mothers, you know, parents where they were with like no shame attached to it. And it was always very science-based, which I have a lot of respect for. And yeah, it was just one of those accounts that really stood out to me as doing the work to really meet moms where they are. And I just always had so much respect for that. You also had the Invisible Load kind of series that you had been working on. And you were one of the first Instagram accounts to really vocalize a lot of that. And so much conversation has kind of, you know, developed, you know, over the years about the invisible load and the emotional load of, you know, parenting and all of that. But yeah, your account was one of the first ones to ever really put that to words, and obviously through infographics. And we've talked about this obviously through the course of writing the book, but moms are really busy people, right? And so getting a mom's attention, you know, Instagram is one of those ways where it's like, you know, we're scrolling our phones, you know, breastfeeding in the middle of the night or whatever, right? And it's like, there's an opportunity for this resource and this lifeline. And I think your account was that for so many people, and especially, you know, myself during that time. And so, as I said, so my youngest was born the week it was declared a pandemic. And so I like brought a baby home, complete chaos. As everybody remembers, we don't have to kind of rehash the last 4 years of our life, but it was quite a wild time. And I didn't have any, you know, serious mental health kind of concerns when I had my first child. But with my second, it was something about the combination of the pandemic, you know, being a working mom, 2 kids, being pulled in all these different directions, obviously everything going on in the world, that I started to realize kind of at that 6-week mark postpartum, I was like, I am not, my mental space is not where it was when I had my first kid. There's something different happening here. And I really had to figure out what was different about this experience. And really, it was just, I absolutely knew that I had postpartum depression and anxiety. It wasn't a question in my mind. I know a lot of people are like, they feel feelings and they don't know what those feelings are. And I think because I had the difference of, you know, with my first child versus my second, having different experiences postpartum, because the world was very different, I was very clear on what it was. And I represented a book a number of years ago, a graphic novel memoir called Dear Scarlet. And it is about my author's experience with postpartum depression, but told through graphic novel. And I, again, hadn't experienced that, but I've worked with a couple creators who've been, you know, so open about their mental health over the years. And I was really able to kind of, and I feel really lucky, you know, that I was really able to put a name to the feelings that I was having postpartum. Mm-hmm. All this to say, all this was happening around the time that your account was really active on Instagram. And one of those accounts where, when I was trying to figure out what these feelings were, and that's the beauty of your account, which was always that, again, it's putting words to feelings. And we can't take that for granted, you know, especially when somebody's at the depths of their kind of emotional bucket and, you know, and they're struggling and they need help. And so I kind of reached out to my doctor and, you know, got help and, you know, got on medication and therapy and, you know, climbed my way out of my hole. You know, I just feel lucky that I was able to get those resources professionally. But all this to say, you know, there is something really powerful about online community and online spaces and giving voice to women's feelings and parents' feelings when times are really tough.
Hmm. Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. And I think that it is an experience that many people can relate to. The pandemic was the most cruel time in a lot of ways, but the things that were happening with people birthing and not being able to have their partner, like, it was just sheer and utter chaos for bringing babies into the world, not having support, daycare being closed, like all of the things were really a pressure cooker for, like, not adjusting well. Like, did not set us up for success at all.
When you are busy with little ones, managing finances can seem so stressful. Things like budgeting and remembering to call and cancel old subscriptions often fall through the cracks. But Rocket Money makes things easier for busy moms with too much on their plates. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. You can see all of your subscriptions in one place. And if you see something you don't want, Rocket Money can help you cancel it with just a few taps, which means no more trying to cram phone calls into nap time. Rocket Money even shows you your monthly spending and helps you create a custom budget and stay on track. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/momwell. That's rocketmoney.com/momwell. rocketmoney.com/momwell. Mealtime with kids can be stressful, but with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals, it can be a lot easier. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. No worrying about ingredients and nutrition, no prep, no mess, and no cooking while wrangling toddlers. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or vegan and veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Factor can even be tailored to your schedule. Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Take the stress out of meals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/momwell50 and use code MOMWELL50 to get 50% off your first box.
It's interesting that when you realized it, you didn't go back and forth with yourself. I think that for me, well, and I don't know how much my profession plays into this or the perfectionist piece, but being like, oh no, like I got this, mm-hmm. you know, like I probably in retrospect had postpartum depression or anxiety with my first and just kind of like grit my teeth and push through it.
Muscle through
and
it.
Then with my second. And then with the third, it was just kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. You think about the invisible load. And in the book, we talk about it being this invisible backpack you get handed. that load like exponentially grows with each child that you get, because you've got different preferences, different things to manage, different schedules, different care providers to orchestrate, like all the things. So now I've got the weight of three of these invisible backpacks on that I've never even acknowledged or realized was there. I could feel it. I could feel the weight of how heavy everything was, but didn't have the words to articulate it until something that I call my aha moment, where the veil was torn and it just became so clearly evident to me. I talk about this moment a lot in the book, and it's always so funny because I'm like, it's just freaking laundry. Like, it's just laundry. How can laundry be the source of this epiphany that kind of has changed so much and really even birthed the Invisible Load series on the platform, which is what the platform is so known for. But I was like 8 or so weeks postpartum with my third, maybe 12, somewhere in the early postpartum days. And my husband and I had a system of how we did laundry, and he's very duty oriented, and he sets the timer. And so he gathers everything, puts it in, changes it over, brings it to me or puts it in the room, and I will fold it and put it away. It's been the system for all of time. It's always been the system. But with a family of five, three young children, all the blowouts, all the spit ups, all the things. And this laundry pile is just growing beyond what it's ever been before, like unruly and unmanageable. And I'm passing it every day, feeling strong resistance and avoidance, and then like criticizing myself the whole way through. Like, why can't you just freaking get your shit together and fold the laundry? Like, what is so difficult? You're an adult. It's just laundry. Fold it and put it away. And for probably a week or two, I don't even know how long it went on for. And I was having this conversation with Fernell of like, what prompted the shift from criticism to curiosity? And it may have been a conversation that him and I had. I can't recall exactly what prompted it. But rather than criticizing myself, it became like, why is this system not working anymore? Why am I feeling so resistant or like avoidant, want to push away from this task? What is going on here? And in that aha moment of, wait a minute, this actually has nothing to do with the laundry that needs to be folded. But when I fold that laundry, I need to put it away in the dressers. And it is a change of season right now where I've got to remove all of the, I think it was fall clothes to summer clothes. I might be getting that wrong. And I had to change over all the seasonal clothes, which meant I had to make sure that each child had the size of the summer clothes that they needed. So I also had to write a list. I also had to shop. And before you knew it, I had 6 hours of invisible work that were really underneath me just folding that laundry and putting it away. And once it became visible to me, it was so clear. We divided it out and my husband took ownership of some and I took ownership of some, and then problem was solved. But like, we don't have the, this sight or the aha moment to see the invisible loads that we are carrying and the language to describe it. And we're so used to just going inward and blaming ourselves for not being able to keep up that we don't even know that it's there.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I think there's that stubbornness also to just be like, if I've done it before or worked with my first kid, then this system should work for my second kid. And right. I think it's like, that's one of the beautiful things about the book, is that it just really recognizes like, there's going to be different stages. I think we know that, right? It's like, oh, everything's just a phase and da 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 da. But it's like, there's stages of your relationship, there's stages of your child's life. And then those infancy stages and those early stages, like they're going through clothes all the time, right? And then it's like, as they get older, it's like, it just happens, you know, that those cycles of clothing just happen a little bit less and a little bit less. And like that intense pressure starts to ease off. And I think we're so used to being like, oh, if that system worked, you know, for our first kid, or, you know, this kind of household management of our labor, you know, works early in our marriage and it's not working later, we're so quick to blame ourselves as the problem, as opposed to like, this is, the system is failing us. Mm-hmm. Let's think about why the system is failing us. And I think your book does such a great job of that.
Yeah, it's interesting how we go inward, like when we aren't keeping up with motherhood, or when we can't juggle an unrealistic amount of tasks or pressure or expectations, we don't question the expectations. We don't question where they come from or why we feel the need to take them on. We question ourselves for not being capable to live up to them, even though they're completely unrealistic to begin with. And I just filmed a reel with Zach Watson, who I know you met, and we were filming about the invisible load. That's like his content is in the mental load division of labor space as well. And I have my invisible backpack with all my blocks in it. And we're talking about all of these shoulds. And I'm like, wait a minute. This isn't my writing. I didn't write my name on this task. Who assigned this to me? And why did I accept? Like, why am I still carrying it?
Yeah.
Because I didn't opt in for this. And I don't think that we ever, when we are blaming ourselves and criticizing ourselves, ever have that moment of like, hold on a second. I don't have to carry this. This isn't mine to subscribe to. Like, this isn't in alignment with my values or all of those pieces. But until we kind of see that invisible labor, we can't even really go down that journey, I don't think.
No, I think we're just also really quick to be focusing on all the minutiae, like the laundry and like packing the lunches, because it's like that's the thing in front of us. And I think another thing your book does really well is it just like zooms out and talks about the values, you know? There's a line in your book where you say something to the effect of like, why do we have to invest every moment of our time, every dollar we make, and every bit of our energy in order to make our children happy? And, you know, this perception of what we think our children need to be happy versus what they just need from us, which is like boundaries and love and, you know, all of those other, you know, things that when we imagined what it was going to be a mother or to be a parent, it was the love and like building a family and, you know, all of that wonderful stuff, as opposed to like, who's going to pack the lunch and who's going to schedule the doctor's appointments. But we get bogged down because like, that's the task in front of us. That's the to-do list. And when we zoom out and we're thinking, what kind of family do I want to build? You know, what kind of relationship do I want to have with my children? And what kind of marriage do I want to have, you know, as my children grow up? You know, that's the guiding light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that we're focused a lot on the doing, like what we need to do to be a good mom, rather than like who we want to be or how we want to show up. And I feel like maybe that's a mixed statement because there's a lot about this whole respectful, gentle parenting place that is constantly about trying to be better in a way that I feel like is even perfectionist and sort of pushes us to be in this space of always trying to, I don't know, like be perfect, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, so yeah, I think that we can really get caught up in measuring ourselves according to these tasks. And when you and I were talking through, like, what book do you want to write? I was like, I don't know. Like, I know I have something to say. I have a lot of things to say. I have a lot of opinions. I know there's a lot that I want to talk about, but you had said, like, what is the book? Like, if you could write one thing about one thing and leave it out there, what would it be? And then going back and thinking about it and really, well, we went through a couple of proposal processes to really get clear. And I didn't realize that that happened so early on, by the way, in the process, that you have to be so clear about where you're going in the destination of this book. But it started to become so clear to me that being able to question these beliefs and these ideals and challenge the norm of motherhood and these expectations was something that I felt like I had to do. And we talked about this in comparison to like Eve's work, and her work is incredible, fair play. And I'm close with Eve and I love her work. And it's such a valuable system that has helped so many people to apply in their home. And then I would read that book or other books, and it would be like, if you're struggling, you know, maybe see a therapist, or if you're falling back into patterns, you know, you might want to work with a therapist on that. And I'm like, Carly, I'm the therapist. Like, I can walk them through in a guide in this book, like why they keep picking that stuff back up. And coming back to what we were talking about just a moment ago, when we think that, or we believe that, or we've been told that our worth is interwoven with the tasks that we are trying to hand over, how do we actually part with those tasks? Like, if that is the existing measuring stick as I know it to measure my performance in my role as a mother, and I'm giving it ownership to you, I'm going to want to make sure you do it perfectly. I'm going to want to make sure that it's facilitated in a certain way, or I'm going to pick it back up, because how do I define or assess myself in my role if I let go of those things? And that's where the values piece comes in and is so important. But handing it over is not as easy as it sounds. And I think we do that. We divide out the cards, we divide out the work, but then fall back into these default patterns and keep like wonder why that keeps happening.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I felt like, as I spoke to earlier, like, I think what brought me to the content was my own mental health journey. But I think what really was so fascinating to me about working on this book was really just the idea that, like, I felt like I had a pretty good handle on it. You know, I was like, I pat myself on the back. I've been to therapy. I've done my work, but the work is never done, you know? And I think as much as I felt like, you know, as you said, right, like, I've delineated all this between me and my spouse, and we know what we're going to do. And the book still was, like, really challenging a lot of the ideas about, like, that, like, idealistic motherhood and these ideas and the pressures that are put on us. Because as much as I intellectually know I have to let things go, I cannot be superhuman, the guilt that comes from that, like, that comes from a separate place than the intellectualizing of just, like, knowing I have to let it go, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so that was really interesting to me working through this book with you, of just, like, acknowledging, yeah, the difference between that guilt that's, like, I have to retrain my brain in that piece, because I'm very happy to, like, hand over cooking to my husband and, you know, grocery shopping and all of that. But it's like, I still have guilt about that, because I'm like, am I still supposed to be this, like, millennial super mom, you know, in this way that we were taught that, like, we can have it all? That was really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it's hard for a couple of reasons, us, like, unlearning that. It's also hard because society is really quick to put us back in our place, mm-hmm. so to speak. You know, it's like, oh, you're going to let your husband cook dinner? Like, a seemingly whatever remark from a family member or somebody. And then you're like, oh, and then enters guilt, enters the second guessing. And am I not being a good enough wife? Am I not being a good enough mom? And this is just so perpetuated for us that we don't, I don't know, it's really hard to break. But I want to, like, make a distinction here when we're talking about releasing things. Like, obviously, there is a degree of parenting and the tasks that come with parenting that we cannot release. We have to show up for. You know, we've got to wake up in the nighttime and soothe our baby. And we've got to make sure that meals, you know, are put on the table and that there is clean laundry for them to wear. But that is often not the noise and the pieces we are drowning in. It's often the how that needs to be done. It's the fact that I need to cook a meal that looks like it's Instagram worthy or Pinterest worthy, that I need to throw the birthday party that looks like I hired an event planner, mm-hmm. but I did it myself. So it's not usually the what so much, though it can be depending on the dynamic, and some children have high needs and it can be the what for sure sometimes, but it's the how. And I never realized before diving into this work and creating this content and this platform that I could challenge the how. Like, mm-hmm. I think that we're just on autopilot following everybody through that this is the how it's done, that I could actually carve a path for myself. And I was like, wait a minute. People don't know about this side of freedom and motherhood when they are just on autopilot. And that's the piece that I'm like, I don't know exactly how this is going to fully form out in the beginning, but this is the piece that has to get across, because it's like a choose your own adventure kind of path when we tap into our own values. Mm-hmm. But like you said, we're in the minutia, we're in the triage parenting, we're in the day to day, that we don't get to just buy ourselves a little space to take ourselves off of autopilot for a moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, just speaking to my own kind of millennial parenting space, like, I feel like a lot of us knew we wanted to do it differently than our parents,
right.
but we didn't have a role model for that. And I think that's where social media came in and filled that void of, like, what a role model could look like. But it was influencer content that was, like, the picture perfect birthday parties and, like, the Instagrammable Pinterest lunches. And I think a lot of people wanted to live up to this ideal of motherhood that they either had within themselves or, again, these societal pressures. And that compounds, right? It's like when you add in a birthday party and the lunch and, you know, you have to send Valentine's to school. And it's, you know what I mean? So it's just, it's the layering. And I think what your book does really well is it zooms out and it says, let's just choose what we want to focus on as our tasks. And if, you know, something doesn't go perfectly that day, we just have to be willing to let that go. And we have to be willing to let our partner do things and try things, right? And do it their own way. And it's not going to be our way, but it's still valid. However they do it, as long as it's done, right? And all of that is valid. And so that just rebuilding of our own value system and trusting our gut is just something your book does really well.
It's a really interesting, perfect storm of sorts where we have an eager millennial generation, like eager in the sense of wanting to parent differently, wanting to break certain cycles, you know, have a different level or access to knowledge and education about parenting. And there's more literature than maybe we even need sometimes in this space with all the different parenting approaches. So when you mix that eagerness with all of the expectations, you've got a recipe for perfectionism and really people-pleasing and wanting so badly to do it right. Mm-hmm. But when you have all of these conflicting opinions and advice and beliefs and pressures being thrown at you from all the different accounts in all the different philosophies, then you are in a tailspin trying to figure out your identity as a parent and your like locus of control, we call it in psychology, like your trust is so far outside of yourself. It's mm-hmm. not anchored in you anymore. It's very much needs reassurance from others around you. And so it created this space where we just consumed so much, but didn't do any due diligence or fact checking against our values and what we actually care to subscribe to. Mm-hmm. And I admire the wanting to get it right. Like I'm of this generation of like, I want to parent differently. Like we don't want to traumatize our kids and screw them up. The amount of times I hear that in conversations, but also we can't sacrifice our entire well-being in the process because ultimately we burn out our greatest resource, which is ourself, and that has ripple effects down the line for ourselves and our families. So finding that balance and learning to regain trust in ourselves and bring ourselves back, you know, to some sort of anchor is so important in a time where we feel like we are free falling in the advice that is constantly bombarding us.
Yeah. Well, it's just, and it's so reassuring. I mean, I hope everybody listening just feels like they should be so glad that it's like the truth is within us. Do you know what I mean? It's like that pull of that locus of control, like outside of us, we can let that go, right? And we can pull that back and just know that we can trust ourselves because we're just told through marketing and social media and all these other things that we don't know and we shouldn't trust that gut, right? That's the whole point of marketing.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it really comes at moms in all different directions and parents at all different directions. But yeah, I just found that so just reassuring at the end. It's like, you know, we're building this family how we want to, you know, we're parents the way we want to. And I don't know, I just found that very like satisfying. I remember writing you a note at the end of reading the full manuscript. And I wrote, I think I fell in love with my family all over again at the end of this book, because I felt like, again, we're pulled in all these different directions. And, we have this like idea of how motherhood is going to go, or in this perception of how other people perceive our parenting, whether it's like our right. parents or our friend groups, that comparison game, right? There's like all these different things that can kind of come into that. Yeah. And I remember writing to you being like, I think I fell in love with like being a mom all over again in a different way, because, you know, there's a reason we chose to, you know, have kids and, you know, raise a family and have this life. And we have so much more control over it, I think, than we allow ourselves to believe.
Mm-hmm. And the unspoken fallout of not doing some of this work and challenging this load is complete and utter resentment for the role that we mm-hmm. embody, right? Being the default parent or being the primary parent, being the only one who knows where anything in the house is, being the one adult in the room that everybody looks to, you know? And of course, that is infuriating. Of course it is. But it also doesn't have to be that way. I mean, maybe you're always going to be the primary parent because I don't know the family dynamics and things like that. But we don't have to drown and carry it all and resent our role in that way. We can learn to parent in a way that feels more fulfilling. Doesn't have to fulfill us completely because we can want things for ourselves outside of this role. Something that we can actually enjoy throughout the process. And I talk about this like rage volcanic eruption moment that I had when I'm like got pulled over by the police on an already really insane day and got the book thrown at me with tickets and like hyperventilating in my driveway kind of situation where I was like, okay, this is not normal. I might need to seek some support. And in going through that experience and realizing I needed help, really like tore the veil of this perfect mother carrying all of the things perfectly load that I, or facade that I was putting on, or this perfectionism that I was trying to maintain. And I finally could just be human for a moment. And something about challenging this perfectionism and feeling the need to live up to everyone else's expectations, there's a real shift that happens when we start to live for ourselves and our values, or mother, you know, for our family and our family's values, versus trying to live up to and for everybody else. And for me, that was a catalyst moment to say, like, I can reclaim this motherhood experience. It can be joyful. I can do it differently. I don't have to constantly strive and burn myself out to get to this picture that is not rewarding or fulfilling for me or my family or anybody around us, but that I can actually like take a big sigh and realize, wait a minute, I can actually go a different route. And I feel like we all need to have that moment where we can realize that we can do it differently and go a different path.
Yeah, I think that's just, it's so beautiful. And it just speaks to, you know, another one of my favorite parts of the book is just that, you know, everybody is going to be doing this their own way. And there is a lot of pressure on us, again, from, you know, whether you do follow social media accounts or, you know, external pressures where you feel like, oh, I see that there's a problem and I want to course correct. And I think a lot of people think about, like, well, doing therapy or doing all of this stuff is a lot of work. And what does work look like? And, you know, what's the benefit on the other side of me doing the work? Because I can grit my teeth and I can fold the laundry, but it's like, right. You know what I mean? You don't know on the other side of work what's on the other side. And I think what the great thing about your book is that it doesn't feel like work when you're reading it, but on the other side, you're just like, oh, I have an idea now of what it looks like to be free, you know, like free in my decision-making about how I want to parent, free to have the conversations with my partner or, you know, companion about, you know, how we're going to do things differently. Because it's scary to just be like, I don't know what's on the other side of all this work. And it's so much more tempting just to, you know, just kind of grit your teeth and, you know, do the dishes even when we're grumpy that we did it for the seventh day in a row or whatever, you know?
Yeah, that falling back in love with your family and acceptance and appreciation for your role, because it's not the thing that's actively drowning you. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really the piece, right? And I think that doing that in a way that I'm not fueling your rage throughout the book. Like, we talked a lot about tone, and there are a lot of different accounts that talk about the mental load or talk about the division of labor and how unbalanced it is and things. But there is a real sharp tone that can come towards partners in some of this conversation. But that's not my experience. I have the most willing and contributing partner, right? So it was such an important piece for me to keep a tone that is understanding too, that he's subject to his own norms that cause him to operate in his parenting role the way that he does. And I think that we achieved that piece where you can see kind of both sides of the equation in a way that you understand each other better and you're not like pitted against one another, just creating more conflict and resentment. Because for sure, resentment is the prominent feeling I would say we have when we feel smothered and our partner seems to be enjoying their leisure time. Like, of course, we're going to feel resentful. But being able to disarm some of that was also an important piece so that you can work towards this like in a team instead of feeling like you're scorekeeping or tit for tat back and forth.
Well, one thing we haven't touched on, but I wanted to touch on, was this also like the role modeling we do for our kids. Cause we haven't really talked too much about like how this appears to our children either. And I think what's really important to me in terms of like a value system is my boys knowing that their parents, you know, have really, you know, they have conversations about the load and who's doing what and who's the primary parent and how that's going to shift throughout their childhood. I think it's just so healthy for children to witness their parents kind of having these conversations and figuring out a way that they're, and just having moms that aren't stressed, you know, it's like, what does a relaxed mom look like? What does a calm mom look like? Like, we don't have a lot of examples in our society of like what that looks like. And it's often portrayed really negatively. I would just love to like reframe that idea of like what just like a happy, calm, confident, you know, just like well-adjusted mom looks like, and just have that example for my kids and just know that, you know, through my partnership with their dad and, you know, my husband, that, you know, that healthiness can show up like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Instilling in my boys that they don't assume that the woman in the home is the default for all the care and household work is so fundamentally important to me. And it's definitely would have been the case on the beginning of this journey where like I owned everything mm-hmm. and like willingly, like eagerly to try to prove myself in this role, where now they're like, what's daddy making for dinner? Or like, daddy, is it, you know, where's this sweater in the laundry, you know, and like bypass me for anything house or like care work related, because they know their dad's the better one to seek out for that. And it's so important because then it's setting up their households to function so differently when they're older.
Yeah.
And it's cute. We're working on like reels and stuff for release of the book as we're getting close to launch. And they've been a part of like all the submission process and stuff, which has been so freaking cute. We got the galley of the book, which is like the preprint for press. And I waited a couple days until it was a good time to open it with the boys. And yeah. We're going to share that video. It's freaking adorable. My littlest is like, it says made by mummy on it and stuff. Aww. So being able for them to see, and they know I'm building a company, I'm writing a book, I'm doing these things. Yeah. And daddy does these things in the company too. He does a lot of things like that. But that I'm not assumed to and boxed into this one role in their minds and in our house. Yeah. So important.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's unbelievable how revolutionary it is, you know, when you like zoom out and you're like, the fact that my kids, you know, my husband cooks dinner every night, right? And it's like, if you rewound 15 years, 20 years, 25 years, it's like that just would have never been how most households function. And I just feel like our generation has just done so much work, I think, just to kind of course correct in such an incredible way. And I'm just excited. I'm excited for this generation of kids just to know that they get to show up however they want, right? Because, you know, it's not just about releasing women from, you know, all these pressures. It's about releasing men, you know, from these pressures of masculinity, and boys being able to see, you know, all of the different things they can be as well. So mm-hmm. I just love it.
I know. Oh, well, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for being my life coach throughout this process. We're not quite done. There might still be some coaching yet. We'll see. But it's been such a, like as long I'm from the digital space, 2.5 years is such a long journey to get just mm-hmm. to this point where it's finally out there. But excited to see people's reactions and hear their thoughts about the book. So thank you for walking me through all the path to get here. Appreciate it so much.
It's been my absolute pleasure. I mean, one of my favorite parts of my job is that I get to work with all these different experts in their fields, and I just get to like siphon all this knowledge from them. It's just like so selfish of me to be like, I get to learn so much. And, you know, just working on this project with you has just helped reframe, just the kind of the legacy I want to leave and the role model I want to be for my boys and the partner that I want to be to my husband. So thank you.
Oh, thanks. And the book is available for pre-order when this is dropping out on April 9th. You can buy it wherever books are sold or go to ericajossa.com and get the links there. I can't wait to hear what you think about it and your reactions as well. Carly, you have your podcast where you go through different books, all kinds of different genres and things, and dive into the publishing world. So where can people find more from you?
Absolutely. Yes. So I'm on a podcast called The Shit No One Tells You About Writing, where we coach authors through the whole experience of getting an agent. And we also interview bestselling authors and debut authors and aspiring authors about their journeys. And I'm also on social media at Carly Waters, CarlyWatters. You can find me mostly on Instagram and Threads these days.
Again, thank you for joining us. And if you've got any additional questions about the process or the book for Carly, let us know, and we can always come back around for a part two. So thanks everyone for tuning in today.
Thank you.
I feel so emotional looking back over the journey of this book and chatting with Carly about how everything unfolded. I remember so well the laundry story I shared with her, that aha moment where everything clicked for me.
I've often wondered what early motherhood might have looked like for me if I would have had that moment sooner. I know that those of you out there listening are at all walks of motherhood. Some of you are just entering the adjustment, living the invisible load in a very real way. And I know that many of you are a little bit farther along. But I want you to know that no matter whether your baby was born yesterday or you were parenting teenagers, it isn't too late to do this work. The invisible load of motherhood doesn't just disappear after the postpartum period. In fact, in many ways, while the pressure might reduce, the labor only increases. Permission slips, field trips, school events, sports and activities, juggling schedules and packing school lunches, and planning all the things. When I look at what our lives look like now, with hockey season in full swing and homework to do and all the moving pieces, I can't imagine how I would be surviving if I was still carrying the invisible load all on my shoulders. For me, the aha moment was everything. It changed the course of how my husband and I approached not just laundry, not just housework, but everything. How we work together to support our children, the example we want to set for our boys, the relationship that we each have with all three of them, the ownership, the confidence, and the trust involved. I want you to know that it doesn't have to be the way it is now. If you're drowning in the load or feeling unseen and unheard, or you think that you have to do all these things and do them all by yourself, it doesn't have to be that way. We can do it differently. And that's what I want for you. I want to hear your stories and your thoughts on this episode. Please reach out with a DM or leave a review. And if you're listening to this episode before April 9th, I also want you to know that you can pre-order your copy of the book today and access special pre-sale bonuses, including a companion guide to the book, free access to one of our mini courses on dividing the labor after maternity leave, and a chance to win a $250 gift card for Smash Tests. Head to ericajossa.com to order your copy now. That's ericajossa.com to pre-order your copy now. I'll see you right back here, same time, same place next week, where I am pulling out a vault episode with Casey Davis, founder of Domestic Blisters and Struggle Care, to discuss why a messy house gives us so much anxiety. You don't want to miss it. I'll see you right back here next week. I can't even begin to tell you how happy and honored I am that you choose to spend your time here with me each week. If you're looking for resources or links from today's show, or you need a refresh on anything we've talked about, visit our show notes. You can find the link in the episode description, or you can head directly to momwell.com/learningcenter. To join the MomWell email list and be the first one to know about new episode drops, insider info, or freebies, head to momwell.com/newsletter. Join me next week. Until then, remember that you have to be well to MomWell.